Life as we know it is inconceivable without plastics. They're in the clothes we wear, parts of cars, household items, and the list goes on and on. You can find them everywhere from the North Pole to the depths of Mariana's Trench, but they're also in the air we breathe, the water we drink, the food we eat, albeit in a different form. Microplastics are defined as particles of plastic 5 millimeters in size or smaller, and they are the broken down products of larger plastic objects. For quite some time now, researchers have been looking for microplastics in the human body. And in recent history, they've been found in the lungs of living humans, blood samples of healthy donors, and in the placentas of unborn babies. These plastics are foreign particles. And the question is, what exactly do these plastics do inside the body? Do they cause disease? The answer at the moment is that we don't know. There are several key unanswered questions, which we are going to explore in this episode. But first, let's meet our guest, Dr. Dick Fetak.
My name is Dick Fetak, and I'm a biologist and a toxicologist by training. I used to work for almost a decade at the Scientific Institute Delftaris in Delft in the Netherlands. But since 2020, I'm retired, or partly retired, I should say. I'm an emeritus professor with the Department of Environmental Health at the VU University Amsterdam. And for many years, I've been involved in the field of ecotoxicology, water quality, environmental health issues. But more recently, my work focuses on ecological and human health risks of micro nanoplastics. I'm still strongly engaged in the front-runner Dutch Zonewe Microplastic and Health Program, and also co-leading the Momentum project that aims to determine the effects of micro nanoplastics in human health and ultimately also to prevent this.
So what's the big deal about microplastics? Why should we care? Like any other foreign particles, we need to look carefully at what exactly microplastics, and their smaller versions, nanoplastics, do in our bodies. If the particle load increases over time as a result of the body being unable to effectively clear them, some papers propose that this may lead to chronic activation of the immune system and chronic inflammation, which can be a factor leading to the development of other conditions. Additionally, the surface of these particles can potentially harbor pathogens that might otherwise be cleared away. Nanoplastics have been shown to be able to cross cell membranes, which could result in cell toxicity. As mentioned before, however, currently there aren't any papers that conclusively suggest a causative relationship between microplastic load and a disease. Researchers suggest that there are a few key areas that need to be investigated first. For example, standardization of measuring techniques, new ways of biomonitoring, and characterizing particles, to name a few. There are many, many types of plastics, and even more types of additive chemicals mixed in. That being said, the sentinel question is dose response.
As I said, you know, there are plastic particles in our blood and tissue. The question is, you know, are these doses high, significantly high to trigger or mediate responses leading to disease? And we know that from animal studies, et cetera, that these particles can cause health damage. We know it also from occupational studies in humans that are exposed to high levels of micro nanoplastics, that they can develop all sorts of health issues. But so far, as we look at the Momentum project, for example, and also other studies that used in vitro and ex vivo human cell models, we can confirm that that plastic particles, they can cross biological membranes externally and internally. And so that having said that, you know, the next step would be, you know, to establish dose response relationships. But then the next step will also to find counterparts in humans that can be associated, diseases that can be associated to these in vitro ex vivo results. And then you have to think about what we already know from other well-studied particles, you know, black carbon, for example, cardiovascular diseases is one thing, lung diseases is another issue. But then again, you have inflammation. And the difference maybe with plastic particles compared to non-plastic particles is that the plastic particles, they cannot be easily removed from the body. They cannot be broken down. And that means that if they stay in the body, they will constantly trigger the immune system. And if that's the case, that may be at the cost of what we call, you know, immunohomeostasis. it may have an effect there that it can affect the immune system in such a way that it weakens the system and it makes you more vulnerable to disease, et cetera, et cetera. But it is a long story. Before we know that, we really need to know more about, how much of these plastic particles are inside our body. And another thing is that makes these plastic particles also a bit different from the Orwell study particles. And we live in a multi-particle world, eh? I mean, we're exposed to so many particles. And that means if you try to look for associations with chronic diseases like cancer, for example, or like obesity or degenerative diseases, etc., you need always to think in terms of how much are these plastic particles contributing to the total particle load in your body? Is it 1%, or is it because these diseases are multifactorial by definition, of course. And there are many other stressors and particle types that can also cause the same diseases. So, having said that, I think it's important for these plastic particles to understand how much they differ from others in terms of, let's say, do they have a unique toxicological profile? And like I said, they are what I find quite intriguing. They have this corona. There's a lot of emphasis on this corona of these particles, that they can act as a factor for chemicals that are absorbed, or they can the chemicals that they contain themselves, like additives or monomers, they can leach out of these particles, but also the pathogens. And even, the fact that plastics and also plastic particles seems to also to facilitate or at least to enhance the antimicrobial activity. So that is something. There are so many dimensions with these microplastic particles, so many dimensions. And of course, there is, if you think about that, there are more than 5,000, 6,000 different plastic traits on the market. You can probably all different polymer types, polymers, etc., blends, etc. You can all find them probably also somewhere back in the environment. And then there are more than, I think 10,000 additives, plastic additives that are used to functionalize these polymers into plastic products. And I think it was a recent study showing that about more than 2,000 have been labeled as potentially hazardous to the environment and humans. And then there is this third dimension where we talk about, the microbiological hazards. It could also have an effect on your microbiome in the gut, for example, or the lung. It could also maybe bring certain human pathogens inside your body and increase the risk of infections or spread the pathogens because these plastic particles go everywhere. So yeah, all having said that, it's a very complicated issue. And so to make any sense here, I think we have to simplify it. Think about what sort of different plastics are what are our dominant plastics in the environment? Can we identify the ugly guys, the ugly plastics from the good plastics, so to speak? The thing is, everybody says, we should not use plastics, but plastics, there are plastics, and there is still a future for plastic, I think, but first of all, we have to look at the plastics that really need to be replaced because they really damage the environment and our health. And so if we can identify them and reduce the amount of these plastic production, et cetera, then I think we're on the right track. And well, yeah, the thing is, the complexity is, if you think about it, we talk about sources like plastic bottles and things that generate microplastics in time. But if you think about it, there are other sources that not many people talk about yet. If you look at the plastic paints and coatings that are used, on ships, in your house, on the walls, outside on buildings, on roads, you can't recycle these ones. They're just designed to be wasted. They erode, they shred, and they erode, and etc., and they end up in the environment. So there's still a lot of things we are discovering now, and so it's a long way to go.
Dr. Fetek is also involved with the Momentum Project, which aims to determine the effects of micro and nanoplastics on human health with the ultimate goal of prevention. It is funded by the Dutch Zone MW, top sector life sciences and health, government ministries, and companies. The project spans 12 universities, medical centers, and research organizations, as well as 15 international partners.
In the Netherlands, we started already in 2018 to look into this health issue, this potential health issue of micro nanoplastic. The Dutch Organization for Health Research in the Netherlands funded 15 breakthrough projects, short-term projects on the issue. And from there, you know, from these findings, in 2020, we developed the consortium of microplastics and health, larger scale project in the Netherlands, basically to put the research infrastructure in the Netherlands in place for the next 10 or 15 years to look into this issue, because I think it's potentially a serious health issue. And if you look at the breakthrough projects, you probably heard of this study where we detected microplastic particles in human blood. That was one of the breakthrough projects. So there are several other ones as well. But now we are in the middle of this Momentum Consortium, this Momentum project. And I'm co-leader. Professor Judith Legler of the University of Utrecht is the other co-leader. And the objectives are as follows. First of all, we really want to get a better understanding of how micro and nanoplastics are formed. I think that is quite crucial. So this is more the material science side. Second, we also like to characterize the internal human exposure. So we would like to continue this groundbreaking work on micro nanoplastics in human blood and also extend it to other tissues, including placenta and lungs, etc. I think it's crucial to understand, you know, if these plastic particles do accumulate in certain organs and may reach levels that could cause harm. And then another objective is that we look more into this exposure. Apart from the exposure side, we also look more in depth into the hazards. So the third project there is to characterize the immunological hazards of exposure to microplastics, where we focus on immunological hazards. But there is a much wider scope. We understand it as well, you know. And the fourth objective is to develop risk assessment, a roadmap for the future. And finally, we also already starting to think about solutions.
In Dr. Fetek's papers, a consistent theme is the call for more research in the field. So I asked him if he could design any experiment across any budget and time frame to answer any question related to microplastics. What would he choose?
I would like to try to expose humans to micro nanoplastics. Label these plastics or C14 radioactive, very, very low doses that don't harm humans, you know, and to understand where these plastic particles end up in the body. And there have been studies doing that with shellfish, for example, and we're also designing a study now with mice. But it would be preferably to be very good if you could do that sort of intervention studies, or at least, you know, with humans. And so that would be a very important thing to do. And then, of course, what I think is very important is to start straight away with more biomonitoring, measure in larger in the general population, but also susceptible populations, and measure the amount of plastics in blood as soon as you have developed the methods. We should do that. For me, the conclusive evidence would be to start, you know, with, let's say, there is no way you can easily can come up with the causality here. It's a thing that will take decades, you know, like you look at the smoking and lung cancer cases, or the cases of pesticides, for example, and degenerative neurodiseases, etc. So this takes a long time. We know it also from the field of endocrine drug and chemicals. I mean, there is so much study done already, 20, 30 years on these endocrine disruptors. And we know that, in fact, you know, quite a number of these plastic additives have these endocrine disrupting properties. So, but again, you know, it's all a question of looking for associations in the first place. If you deal with humans, you cannot experiment with humans too much. So, associations, you need epidemiological research, long-term research, intervention studies is something that's also happening at the moment. But really, to link it to these chronic diseases is quite something. I think we may be happy if we can say something, you know, that microplastics, nanoplastics may cause, let's say, may attribute or contribute a certain percentage to these sort of modern diseases, because there are, as I said, you know, there are many other stressors, chemical stresses, particle stresses that do the same thing. So there is not really, so far as I know, a unique endpoint that is only related to plastic exposure. And the plastic particles, they contribute to existing diseases or maybe new diseases. I'm not sure yet if we have looked already there. But it's and that is also particularly the problem in the environment. You know, we can do a lot of experimental work. We can try to do that in mesocosms, you know, to simulate the environmental conditions. But looking in the field itself and to try to discriminate the impact of plastics or plastic particles on marine organisms, for example, or ecosystems, or it is so difficult. And they're constantly changing depending on the environmental conditions. The change coming from the environment, going inside your body, crossing, you know, the organ barriers, they change all the time. That is quite complex, but we have to understand that how do all the changing properties of these particles, how they influence the fate and toxicity. But again, you ask me one experiment, I would go for, you know, to understand, are there really, how do these particles, how much, what is the fraction that is really taken up? Because we know that is a minor, very minor fraction that is capable of crossing these external membranes and ending up in your circulation. Most of the plastic particles are pooped out, or you cough them out again, or you swallow them and put them out. So is it 1%? Is it less than 1%? Is it 2 or 3, 4%? And then one of the issues at the moment is also the upper size limits. You know, the studies so far that identified plastic particles in human matrices like placenta and also gut tissue, etc. So there's a lot of questions there that need to be solved. But as soon as we can establish in a better way these internal concentrations and also the distribution, potential accumulation of these particles in the body, I think then we are on the road, you know, to do a more adequate risk assessment.
It's clear at this point that microplastics are everywhere, and we're exposed to them constantly. The hard data needed for policy change is many years away. It's almost like the chicken or the egg problem. Policy change likely won't happen without concrete data suggesting causality between microplastics and disease. But for researchers to establish causality between microplastics and a given disease, they may need to look back at decades of exposure data across a very large sample size. And if causality is established, by that point, exposure levels could be much, much higher. At the end of our conversation, I asked Dr. Fetak about how individuals can reduce their own exposure to microplastics.
Let me take the example of my own household. You know, when my wife was pregnant, we really were very careful with, you know, eating anything from cans. We know these cans, they have a plastic layer inside that can generate particles and also leach a lot of, you know, additives that are not particularly healthy for the development of the fetus. So that is one thing. But the thing is, you know, reduce the amount of plastics in your household. You don't need all these plastics. And try to ventilate your house very well, because we start to understand, you know, that particularly house dust is a sink of microplastics, but also a source at the same time. So, meaning as much, the clothes you wear, etc., the curtains that are all made of synthetic plastics, that they could potentially they could generate fibers and microplastic particles, and they end up in the dust. So that's one thing. And the other thing is, avoid drinking from plastic packaging materials. I've done it for many years, probably you also. You drink from these paper cups from coffee machines, etc. But now there are studies out showing, that you are exposed to vast amounts of micro nanoplastics when you put some hot liquid in these cups. And you drink, you are exposed to acutely exposed to hyper concentrations if you drink from these cups. Don't put anything in the magnetron that is packed in plastics, etc., etc. You may, contaminate your food, you may, with particles and chemicals, etc. So these are basically the things. And for me, very important is, and that's one of my passions at the moment, together with my wife, educate people, particularly youth. We go to schools and we explain it to the youth is the future. And there is what we see more and more, many young kids, they lose the connection to nature. They don't care about it. And so instead, they should take care of this planet. And so we have to inform them about this particularly these different crises, but also particularly the plastic pollution we be causing, and also the health problems, potential health problems. So education is an important thing as well.
To that last point, it's important to acknowledge the broader plastic pollution issue. We've discussed the potential impact of microplastics on humans in this episode, but this is part of a bigger environmental story. That concludes this episode of Hashtag Health. We'd like to thank Dr. Fetak for taking the time to be on the show. If you enjoyed listening to our podcast, please consider giving us a rating or review and subscribing to our show. You can also follow us on Instagram or Twitter at Hashtag Health Podcast and like us on Facebook. We hope you enjoyed this episode and can't wait for you to check out more of our podcast. My name is Jay, and thank you so much for listening to Hashtag Health.